Alan Grant. You look the same.
Oh.
And this place, you.
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast, Jurassic Park Retrospective Series.
This is how you make dinosaurs?
No. This is how you play God.
Join Garrett.
You command respect. People believe you.
Matt.
Can I get you something and a beer? Or...
And Adam.
Gee, the lack of humility before nature that's being displayed here staggers me.
As they take a tour of one of cinema's most popular franchises.
Dear heavens, I think we're back in business.
Will Matt make more enemies than some out-of-reach dino food?
Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
And where does Adam stand on yet another film series started by the Beard?
Oh, that's discouraging.
Find out the answers to these questions and more on this podcast, 65 Million Years in the Making.
These are aggressive living things that have no idea what century they're in, and they'll defend themselves violently if necessary.
Courtesy of Percolated Media.
Hang on to something!
Jurassic World Rebirth, released July 2nd, 2025. Budget on this was $225 million. Box office, $768 million. So first one in a while to not crack a billion. And this was directed by Gareth Edwards. Matt, how the hell did we get to here? We don't have Colin Trevorrow. Steven Spielberg is still on as executive producer, pretty involved in this from what I read. We'll get to it, but would you call this, it's called Rebirth. Is this a reboot? Is this a requel? What's going on here?
I don't know what you call this because it's canonical to both franchises. They directly reference, I thought the Jurassic World title was just sort of the new brand that was going to be associated with it, but I was surprised that the movie did actually keep that timeline versus doing a strict reboot. So I kind of look at this as just another sequel in the World franchise. I can't call it a reboot. I can't call it a legacy sequel because it's really not to the first one, although we'll certainly talk about that in the production. But this has to be also the record, though, for one of the quickest turnarounds from, if you do look at this as a reboot, ending one series and doing another one, because Dominion was 2022, and not even just about 3 years later, they had a new one in theaters. That's a remarkable amount of turnaround for something that ended, and you're, if you do call it a reboot, it's pretty quick to do so.
Yeah, and I was pretty surprised because I was trying to figure that out. To me, when they put it out with Jurassic World, that made me think that, okay, this is a Jurassic World sequel. Those paid homage to and knew where they were coming from, and this treads both worlds. But the Rebirth title that they add to it, it's almost like they're telling you it's a rebootiquel, but it's kind of not, but kind of is. And yeah, to Matt's point, if it is, they did not let the blood dry on the last series before they decided they were going to just start it all over again. But Universal Comcast, I mean, the way in the world of mergers, acquisitions, and bullshit that's going on, they are pumping these out. I mean, we couldn't believe it, but the last one made $1 billion. Guess what? This one is probably going to finish right around $800 million. So it slows down a little bit, but people love dinos.
They sure do. Which brings us to this film. And you know who else loved dinos is Scarlett Johansson. And, you know, I would have thought that she would stay away from series like this. And apparently she's been a fan of the series since she was a teenager. She loved the original. And she'd been waiting for 10 years to get a call to join the series. And when she did, she jumped at the chance. Of course, I think there's a line in this movie that pertains to how much she made for this particular film. But Matt, surprised to see Scarlett Johansson here?
Post-Avengers, absolutely. Maybe that is actually why she was not in Jurassic World in the Bryce Dallas Howard role, was because Avengers, that Marvel franchise, took up so much of her time. I mean, that period, she was making a movie almost every year. So I could see why she'd want to do this. But what I like about Johansson is that she's not, I don't feel like she ever acts like she's above any material, because she's done every type of movie you can think of. She's done, you know, the small movies. In fact, she got her big breaks with things like Lost in Translation. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the most consensually attractive women on the planet, and she could coast that, you know, just making movies. You know, she'd go like the freaking Jennifer Lopez route and just make rom-coms for her whole career. But she's done it all, and I would have thought after Black Widow, she'd kind of swear off another big franchise. But when you have an affinity for dinosaurs, I could see that, and the combination of another hefty paycheck convincing her to do so. But I wasn't surprised, but I thought it was a, again, much like Jurassic World, that they sold this on getting a Marvel alumni as your lead.
Yeah. Well, Spielberg's not the only one who's back behind the scenes. We also have David Koepp coming back. We spoke about David Koepp when we did the first Jurassic Park and Mission Impossible earlier this year. According to him, he had to be convinced, but Spielberg had a take that really excited Koepp, and in fact, he included a particular scene from the novel, from the first novel, that we'll talk about when we get to it. But Matt, as a huge critic of David Koepp's work, did that spark any bit of interest from you? Probably not, right?
To me, this reeked of trying to cater to both franchises. You're doing it partially with keeping the Jurassic World brand alive and not calling this Jurassic Park Rebirth, which is kind of an oxymoronical title. But this seemed to me like throwing a bone to people who wanted another version of the first one, especially the people that didn't like Jurassic World, but wanted that type of, you know, return to form. And I've said my piece on David Koepp for, I mean, a lot of movies, because we've reviewed quite a few that he's helmed. In fact, I think we've done five. Fuck it. Done more than I thought. So didn't impress me, but I'm also just tired of, I have franchise fatigue in general. This has also been a very up and down summer. Mm-hmm. And coming off of the colossal disappointment that was The Final Reckoning, in conjunction with the fact I have not liked the previous, well, Fallen Kingdom is its own beast, but I really didn't like the last movie, so doing another one just didn't impress me. Spielberg being quote-unquote more involved in this one is only, I only believe that in the sense they paid him more to produce this.
Well, I actually don't. I think he is more involved, and I'll get to reasons I think that as we get into the film. Now, Adam, as probably the bigger fan of that first film than the other two on this podcast, were you excited for the writer of that to come back and do this sort of requel that we are getting?
No. And I'll tell you why, is I didn't believe that he would actually be doing it other than name. And I believe the same thing about Spielberg. I believe that you're getting people that you can have when you put them in the production credits because it gets attention. And I had a feeling that was all going to be that it was. And I also had the feeling that as quick as this turnaround was, they basically went into filming production with a title, and that was about it. So I was worried. I don't think this thing was fully fleshed out before they started going because of the time frame. And just because you bring in Koepp, I don't know. I mean, put Michael Crichton's name on it for all that it really matters, because I don't know if he actually wrote what we saw.
Okay, one other behind-the-scenes note I want to talk about before we get into the actual film itself is the two directors that were switching around the director's chair before we landed on who we landed on. A couple people we've already spoken about on this particular podcast. One earlier this year, a guy by the name of David Leitch. He who helped helm the first John Wick movie and left that franchise to do other things like Mr. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
He enters negotiations for this in February of 2024. And Adam, I think what you said is absolutely right, because he ended up leaving these negotiations because, according to him, they had already outlined pretty much everything they were going to do, and Leitch was going to be pretty much a hired point-and-shoot director. And so without his creative involvement, he departed. Matt, David Leitch leaves. Why do you think that happened?
I get the sense this movie was basically done before they hired a director, and they just wanted someone to point the camera and shoot. And David Leitch, with his background, all of his movies are predominantly action films, which Jurassic Park has danced around, but they've never fully committed. Like, the franchise as a whole has tried to be every type of genre in one, not really stuck in a lane. And all of his movies are extensively choreographed. This one, not so much. This one would be probably the most CGI heavy he's ever worked with. And I could see that being just something that didn't appeal to him. And he also, maybe he got his fill with Deadpool 2 and having to work with Fox. You know, that's kind of a similar thing, as far as like oversight and this one you don't have a star to cater to, which would be more of a benefit, but I just don't think he would have had as much creative integrity if he chose to do this.
I do agree with Matt. I feel like this movie was already completed in a boardroom before any of the other stuff was done. And I know we'll get to it one day, but Deadpool 2 is such a massive step down from Deadpool that it might as well be called Deadpool Poo. And he didn't even come back for the third, you know? So I can understand him just being like, you know what? I don't need this shit. You know, he's got projects. He's got stuff he could do. So, you know, the rhyme and reason behind it is interesting, but then to go where Universal did, I find was a choice that I would not have seen coming.
Yep. So let's get to that. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, announced as director right after those negotiations broke down was Gareth Edwards. Now, we've spoken about Mr. Edwards in the last couple years. We did Rogue One, and Spielberg really liked his work in Godzilla, which is why he was brought on. But I got to say, guys, you know, say what you want about Edwards. And I said this in that Rogue One podcast. While I'm not a fan of that movie in general, all of his movies are gorgeous to look at.
And I got a lot of problems with some of his stuff. Like Rogue One, I got a massive amount of problems with the story that doesn't work. Godzilla, fuck that movie. But especially the fact that he took two good actors and turned them into piles of shit. But he can shoot like a son of a bitch. Like those, his movies look beautiful. And as much as it gets overlooked and the editing is like a Cuisinart, the creator, I think, really made every studio stand up and go, he made what with how much money? Oh, please get him on the phone.
To an extent, I like Godzilla considerably more than Adam does, although I think everyone on this planet does, just based on him talking. But I was also the harshest on Rogue One. I called it the worst Star Wars movie. And I also know that, not to beat that dead horse, because Lucasfilm already did it when they dug up Peter Cushing, but I couldn't put all the blame on his shoulders, considering how much that movie was just meddled with. And my thoughts on the creator, I thought it was certainly the most authorial thing he had done, because it wasn't attached to an IP. I just think he has a problem directing actors because that's a problem I had with Rogue One and Godzilla. And part of this is also, I don't like this guy. Denzel's kid can't act. And if he can, we have yet to see it. Because between that and Tenet, he is not capable of leading a movie of that scale. And that's a huge problem I had with the creator. But I think Edwards, you know, he comes from a visual effects background, which explains why his movies look so good. But I also find his work to be pretty, on the large, pretty hollow and superficial. Which is actually perfect for Jurassic Park in a lot of ways, because not a lot of these sequels have much of the way of depth.
He is so bad in Tenet. It is unbelievable. I rewatched that movie recently. I could not believe how bad Denzel's kid is in that movie. All right, well, that's it on the plot front. I don't know about you guys, but before I get the plot summary going, I could sure use a Snickers while capping it off with a cold Dr. Pepper and freshening my breath with some Altoids.
Well, we're starting here already. It has been a long time since I have seen a movie. Like, this is Transformers level of product placement.
It is insane.
And it's not like this movie needs additional advertising revenue to sell, but that's also the smart thing on the part of these companies, is they know these movies are cash cows. But God, like, this was so shameless. I'm sure even Michael Bay would be like, pull it back, guys.
Well, as you guys know, I live with somebody who inhales Dr. Pepper. And every time she opened one of those goddamn cans, I'd look and there was a picture of this movie on them. And it is so incredible. I think after the whole E.T. debacle of Eminem saying, you know what, we don't want our product associated with that, and what happened with Reese's Pieces, I think companies are just like, Spielberg wants us to be a part? Sure, let's do it.
I mean, well, it's also the thing, like, the first movie, Barbasol, got a big boost from using it. But it was a plot device. There was a purpose for it. And even Jurassic World, part of the commentary was all the, you know, the Margaritaville and all the stuff you saw in the park was because they were inspired by how Universal and Disney are constructed. This one, it's made worse by the fact that this place is run down. We'll talk about the third act when we get to it, but I'm glad you opened with that, because it was one of my biggest takeaways from this movie was this movie hiked up its skirt and whored itself out to these food companies.
We start off with some jungle noises before we get a pop-up that says 17 years ago, and we're seeing a helicopter land at a research facility as we're hearing over an intercom the term D-Rex. And then it is here where I see the beginnings of that form of product placement, where we have a Snickers that kind of falls and causes this. Why would Snickers agree to have their product be the reason for the outbreak? of this fucking
more T-Rex. More importantly, InGen's or whatever company this is, their security systems are garbage. If a candy wrapper can send the whole place into self-destruct. Like, this was so flimsy that it made the umbrella outbreak in the first Resident Evil movie look like there was held by the CDC. I was laughing my ass off watching the opening of this movie, and I don't think it was intended.
The only thing worse than it being a Snickers wrapper is the bad CGI Snickers wrapper.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, it's funny. I mean, you could have had it more on the nose and had it been Reese's Pieces, and I would have laughed. It's the only way it could have been even funnier. It's a take. But for a bunch of genius scientists, fuck, their security is bad.
Before we go further with the plot, I did want to talk about our theatrical experiences associated with this. Let me get mine out of the way first. Now, Jen was... She likes dinosaurs, but she doesn't like Jurassic Park. So there was no way she was going to go. But her maid of honor really wanted to see this movie. And she's been a friend of mine for over 10 years. And Jen's become really close to her, obviously. So I went and picked her up. And we went to see this. And it was an enthusiastic crowd. We saw this, I think, opening weekend. And she ended up getting one of those Jurassic World popcorn holder. And she really loved going to this, loved seeing this. I think she came out kind of raving about it. And the enthusiastic crowd really enjoyed it too. Matt, you saw this. As we talk, we're reviewing this a month after release. You saw this again yesterday, right? How were your two theatrical experiences?
First one was considerably fuller than the first one, which you can expect going opening night.
First one was fuller than the second, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
When I did see this last night for the second time, there was maybe 10 people in the theater. A lot of kids, and you know, the majority was kids for both, but respectful crowds, which I always appreciate and advocate for, but no major stories. Like, I thought this would be one of those things where I just sat there hating my existence because the theater's so loud and, you know, kids won't shut up, but thankfully it was pretty low-key.
Adam, what about your theatrical experience, sir?
So I saw this the week after. I can't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday. Midweek the week after. And it was just bad mood, bad day. Didn't want to deal with anything. So it was, you know what? I'm taking myself to the movies. So afternoon of the week after, probably about a third full, quarter full. Because you're talking like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was a lively audience. And it was much like some other movies that I saw this summer, the age range spanned the gamut, which made me happy to see. You know, when you get people older than me in there to see it, and you get people younger and bringing their kids because it was still summertime, I knew this was one that at least was reaching out to a bunch of people. So, yeah, pretty good crowd.
All right, so let's see what the crowd had seen on those days. The room is caked in red, and we see a scientist get locked in the room as a... All right, this D-Rex...
I'm sorry, did you say Godzilla Rex?
I'm going to call it for the rest of this podcast a Xeno Rancor, because I think it's a combination of a Xenomorph and the Rancor from Return of the Jedi. Both things that Edwards has been out saying that, yes, those were influences for this. But the design of this, how many more designs do we have? How many more times are you going to change the main villain of these movies? I found it to be distracting. Adam, how do you feel about the design of this creature?
You had to win me back from this, because this is not just a bad design, but if you know the movies he's done before, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you literally just remade Godzilla as this creature. And yeah, it's got a Xeno influence. I don't think it looks very good. I appreciate his, you know, the horror type of reveal that they do for it, you know, and he's done that in several movies as well. I think that's kind of cool. But I can't stand the look of this thing. And it doesn't make any sense to me in the placement of what they built and things like that. That I don't know. I don't think it goes into enough that they were making these weird ass mutants. And then we ended up getting what we got in Jurassic World, because that seemed to be the first time that they were making, you know, such changes. So I think it confuses their own timeline. And I don't know. It's weird, but I understand he doesn't want to make a Jurassic World movie. He wants to make another monster movie.
The D stands for dirt, because this thing looks like it should be having a juice box after recess in the special needs class. I also did like that this is the opening of Godzilla. So he's even aping himself in a movie that is already aping its predecessors. Like, this is self-cannibalization in both ways, and was not setting me up for a good time.
Well, the good news is, after this is over, we don't have to see it again for the next hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes or so. So, like, if you
just
didn't
like Godzilla.
If you didn't like it, well, you don't have to deal with it. All right, so this opening scene, I get that they're trying to go back to how the first Jurassic Park we're getting kind of some looks, but not really. But I'm not sure. I think this scene is good as a little horror scene. I don't know if it works.
I appreciate, because yeah, that when you go back and look at that opening to Jurassic Park, it's a pretty horror movie type of opening. And I do think they're trying to get that here. And I think it works kind of in that respect, candy wrapper notwithstanding. But because of the look that we do get of, yeah, I'm going to go with Matt's, with the derp Rex, it just takes it away. But I do think he's at least homaging what came at the very beginning. And I'm good with that, because you got the park, you got the dinos, you got the majesticness, but it did start very in a horror movie type of way.
Just no, that was my opening thought on this. And it doesn't help that when the score kicks in for the title card, I'm like, clearly you guys think this is a lot scarier than it's being portrayed as. Cause I found this whole opening to be, I thought I saw Naked Gun after this movie. This felt like a parody of Jurassic. I mean, like having a candy wrapper cause the whole like shutdown of a park. That is something the Zucker brothers would do if they made a Jurassic Park movie, especially if they had the guy who looks like Wayne Knight eating a Snickers bar.
So we have yet another summer movie where we're getting more goddamn words on the screen to start things off, as we see that it has been 32 years since dinosaurs have returned, but since then the modern climate and disease have taken their toll and public interest in dinosaurs has waned. We then read that in modern days, dinosaurs now thrive in a tropic band around the equator and human travel there has been deemed forbidden. All right, so more words on the screen. Matt, I'm never a fan of it. You kind of were a fan of it with Superman. What do you think of this?
Is the status quo that different from the previous movie to where you have to bring the audience back up to speed? You could have had just a line, because we're about to get an exposition dump in a little bit to explaining like the dinosaurs are dying out. I don't think this was needed. Do you think that little of your audience for a movie that really doesn't have much in the way of thought that you need to spoon feed this to everybody? I kind of found it a little annoying.
Yeah, I think if you were expecting a lot of younger ones to go, you could do that. But I don't think this was sold as a family film. I feel that it was sold as a teenager and above. So look, have ScarJo be watching a news show where they say this in the span of 10 seconds, or douche bro scientist that comes in later. Same thing. I mean, this is nothing but a dropped line, but to do this text on screen to start, never the best.
We then cut to a wall painting of dinosaurs just getting painted over as traffic is heavy and we're seeing a sick Brachiosaurus just passed out on the street. So I guess this is dealing with the continuity of Dominion and that dinosaurs are out in the wild?
Correct. This is very much a sequel still in that continuity. But even with the 5-year jump, it doesn't feel all that consistent, because there's also no mention, and this is kind of why you could call it a reboot, there's no mention of the Locust Company or anything that's transpired beforehand. It's almost setting you up as like, it's kind of pretending Dominion never happened, and you're just jumping 5 years like post Fallen Kingdom, saying like the world has, much like the opening of Dominion, like dinosaurs are just among us. And you know, I think the whole thing of them dying, I think that actually tracks, given that in the first Jurassic Park movie there's that whole conversation like they're eating plants that are known to be poisonous. So the fact that they're dying out except for one small like part of the near the equator, I thought that was actually the smartest thing in the movie, coming up with a reason why it's happening. I mean, that's a pretty low bar. I mean, it's so low that the little girl in this movie could probably pass over it, but I'll give it brownie points where it's due.
Yeah, I think conceptually it makes sense. You know, you're distinguishing yourself a little bit, but I still have an issue with, what did you release? Like 50 dinosaurs, maybe, Mac? You know, the last movie told us, ooh, we're living among dinosaurs, but didn't show us that. And then here we're told that all those dinosaurs died out. You've not given yourself enough time for these dinosaurs to procreate and grow into a species amongst us again before you kill them out. So I don't know. I wish you would have set it far enough that dinosaurs actually found a way to live before they die. Here it's just like, we need to find a way to fix what we did before.
Now this is when we meet Zora Bennett, played by Scarlett Johansson, and I'm gonna say, in seeing that she had taken this part, I thought it was mostly for the paycheck, but I find her doing good things here. I like the scene she has with Mahershala Ali later. I think she really brings something that, you know, as much as I like Laura Dern, I don't think I really felt in that first Jurassic Park film. I think Scarlett Johansson's actually very good here.
Good is subjective. I think she wants to be here, and I think she is enjoying playing in this universe, and I think that shows. And I'm grateful for that, because I do think that she is going to carry this whether it continues or not. And I'm glad that she wants to do it because I feel that it shows in her performance.
Great is subjective in the confines of this movie, but I read somewhere, I think Guarneri said she slept walk through the movie, and I don't think it's that. I just think it's look, this movie does not preoccupy itself with, you know, strong characterization, but I also don't think, like, she's more interesting than, like, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard were in those sequels. I definitely think she's clearly more engaged, but I also just think she has a natural screen presence that even when she's not, even in garbage like Lucy, I like her. So I've never really had an issue with her in almost anything. So the fact that, I mean, she's basically playing Black Widow again in a lot of ways, but...
Yeah, she does have it no matter what she's playing.
And for the record, I never said great. I said very good. I didn't say great. So we're hearing that this Martin Kreb has a company that specializes in specialized medicine. Get ready, boys. And that he's not through with dinosaurs, even though the rest of the public is. He says he needs Bennett to go to one of the islands around the equator to get samples and face possible criminal charges for a figure that involves a 10 and 6 zeros. By the way, Scarlett Johansson's fee for this movie was a 15 and 6 zeros. He says that her mission can help with heart disease, and she must take this Henry Loomis to help get the samples of living dinosaurs from the biggest dinosaurs located on land, sea, and air. Boys, once again, we are in a video game type movie where we got to get this to get this to get this.
I think it's actually worse. This is the direct plot from Anaconda, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
Oh my God.
Which is a movie in which you have a pharmaceutical company hiring a team of mercenaries to go into the jungle to acquire a plant that will provide, like, some kind of health benefit to the world. I don't think it's heart disease in that, but it's supposed to, like, increase the lifespan. And part of that movie also includes the shady corporate guy going with them, and predominantly takes place on them going on a boat down the Amazon River. Clearly somebody watched that movie, because that's all I could think of watching this. It is simplistic to a fault, but I also don't feel like this movie operates on the level of being a fun B movie, because it's taking itself, I think, way too seriously.
My issue is, it is hard for me to believe that a company that is this rich and has this type of stuff wouldn't just do what needs to get done. Because I look at today's day and age, and I'm like, they don't care if there's laws against it. They're just going to go do what they need to do and pay a fine. So I don't get the convolution that's necessary for this plot to go into place. But I go along with it, and yeah, I feel like I'm playing a video game or watching a cartoon. You know, you might as well have Denny's in this movie as well, because I think the plot was written with crayons on the back of a menu.
My issue with this is the whole idea that the fact that they have bigger hearts means they live to be 100 plus years.
Andre how that worked out.
Yeah, that's complete bullshit. I hate the shit that they're trying to sell me on with this. And look, I am one to go on these podcasts and say I can give a movie its conceit. I think I do it more times than my other two colleagues on this podcast. If this is what they want to give us, fine, I'll go with it. And if the execution means I'm having a good time, then I won't have a problem with it. But spoiler alert, I have a big problem with this.
Well, this movie is also trying to do, it's also Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's, good point. It's the same logic of, oh, shark brains are bigger, so we're going to inject them to make them even larger so we can harness them for Alzheimer's development. I'm like, just because it's bigger doesn't mean it's more intelligent.
I mean, this is, it, they haven't, well, these dinos have not been back in the population long enough for you to make these kind of claims.
Yes.
It's been a few years, but on top of it, this is like current medical company. Hey, how about you work on curing cancer instead of another boner pill, okay? You know, put your focus where you need to focus.
Now, this Henry Loomis, I thought this was Bradley Cooper for the longest time, until my friend who went with me, she cleared up who he actually was and that he was actually in Wicked, which I had completely forgotten about. But
yeah, he is.
Martin says that he has put together a team and they need to leave immediately. Zora says that she can more or less guarantee Loomis's safety. Loomis says that no one cares about the dinosaurs anymore and that they deserve better. So, Matt, we're going meta here, right?
Are we? Because it's just retreading. It's like Rogue One. It's just retreading stuff we've already seen. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point of the Jurassic World movies is that people stopped caring about dinosaurs. So you're just continuing that, trying to slap on a new coat of paint.
in Jurassic World, that made sense after Jurassic Park 3, mm-hmm. because you had the time frame and you had where the world had moved to. That doesn't make sense in this movie when your movie only 3 years ago made $1 billion.
I was just annoyed already at the setup that they're asking me to go with.
And to better prove his point, of course, we have Loomis chewing Altoids in a bit that gets real old real fast. And
this does the fucking Marvel thing of stopping the movie for jokes. Jonathan Bailey is the only person in this movie, though, that I thought was actually like really trying, but I think he's trying too hard.
We then get the triumphant Jurassic Park score, and we think that we're going to be seeing some dinosaurs in all their glory, but no, we're just seeing one in full capture. We then go to a bar, and this is where we meet Marsha Charlotte Ali's character of Duncan Kincaid. So Kincaid says that he can't help, even though they made an agreement on the phone. Zora says he is actually the best, and she does her best to give the guilt trip method to convince Kincaid to go. I really do like Ali in this. He has to do something to wait for this damn Blade movie to get made, right? So why not jump on the Jurassic World bandwagon? I think he's good in this.
Not only do I think he's really good, I do like the interplay with him and ScarJo here. I think they're having fun on set. I think their characters have fun together. So I like them together a lot. The chemistry more than makes up for what I'm lacking as soon as they show up together.
And Matt, given that you think Bailey's the one given the biggest performance, I guess you don't like Ali here?
No, I think Bailey is trying the hardest. I think Ali is just naturally charismatic. I mean, like, he's got 2 Oscars for a reason. And I don't think that Blade movie's happening, which is why he took this movie. And we had a bet going if he was going to die in this movie, because I'm like, he's the one main black guy.
Yeah, oh, I thought of that too.
He does until he doesn't.
Which I'm convinced that was a reshoot, for the record.
I am too. We'll get to that when we get to it. So this convinces Kincaid to go, as he says that no one is dumb enough to go where they're going. And this is also when we meet Steve Atwater from security. We didn't.
This guy's in it for like 2 minutes.
I know.
He's from like Deadpool.
He's from Deadpool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To me, he had to be brought in when Leech was still on the project.
We then cut to a boat. And before I get to this scene and what it explains, I want to say a little story from the screening I went to. So before this movie, there was an ad for the 50th anniversary of Jaws. You can't get away from the fact that there's been 50 years since Jaws had come out. In fact, we might be talking about that as well later on this year. But my friend who I went with to see this said that she had never seen Jaws, which of course took me aback. So I told her that I would take her to the 50th anniversary screening. When this movie was over, I turned to her and I said, you know how you said you've never seen Jaws? Well, you just saw a pretty big attempt to remake it. Because the next 20 minutes or so is a big, blatant remake of Jaws, I feel.
Oh, God. Okay. So this movie is already pretty dumb. We have explicitly said that this area is, like, forbidden and you will be, like, court-martialed and prosecuted if you're caught there. Mm-hmm. But this family still decides to take the fucking boat out there. And it's hard to elicit any sympathy for them for this predicament. And it's made worse by the fact that there are way too many characters in this movie. And their addition only bloats this movie rather than adding to it. I hate this entire family. And I was rooting for those goddamn Mosasauruses the entire time. This was like me watching Jaws and rooting for Bruce.
Yeah, well, I wasn't really talking about the family yet, but I'm with you on that. But what about the fact that
this is the orca sinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, literally, it's him inside the cabinet having to bust himself out. They're sitting on top of it. I half expected him to pull out the flare gun and shoot the Mosasaurus while standing on the mast. I was not smiling, but I was yelling son of a bitch in my head.
Adam, blatant remake of Jaws, right?
No, because if somebody tried to blatantly remake Jaws, it might have some entertainment value and enjoyment to it. This family, Jesus Christ. If I could have poked bigger holes in the boat, I would have helped the dinosaurs. Let this family drown.
So before we get to the family, we're seeing the crew that we just met. They're on a boat in the water, and they're traveling very close to the equator, and we're learning that dinosaurs travel there because it's warmer and the air is different. We're also hearing it is in Atwater's plan to actually kill a dinosaur. And you know what? We've been knocking this movie a lot, but I will say I did like the tech involved with these spears that gather samples. I love the parachutes that open. You know, it kind of adds a little bit of suspense. This was kind of fun for me.
Yeah, I think this is decent and fun stuff. I like all these people here together, too. I think they got good camaraderie. This crew does well and does the job for me. So, yeah, I like this here. And as you mentioned, these little spears and the way they work and stuff, I can telegraph every time they're going to be used and how, and I'm exactly right. But that doesn't take away from them. I'm like, okay, that's different.
I was willing to go with it. I like that the technology is futuristic without being too... It's not like Iron Man where he can put his hand in and literally just make all these giant machinations. I appreciate that, but I also think even in this crew, there's too many characters, which they get rid of a few of them pretty... they get rid of a few of them pretty quickly, which I think they realize that, but I would have rather had just this team or the family. You don't need both, because this is basically... Also, my problem with Gareth Edwards as a filmmaker is he wants to be his own guy and wants to pay reverence at the same time. That's hard to do. But he's just aping the previous movie, because it's like you take the... This is the Lost World mixed with that rescuing the kid in the third movie and just meshing those two stories together. And I don't think it's needed.
Zora then takes Loomis to the edge of the boat and has him imagine being right in the midst of a Mosasaurus's mouth, which I thought was a funny bit. And then we're also getting a little bonding scene between Zora and Duncan. And based on this scene, I thought for sure that these two were going to get together. Adam, you said you were enjoying the chemistry. Come on, this made me feel like these two were going to get together.
Yeah, I had no doubt they were going to hook up. So I'm glad they don't play that route. And there's little drops that they do later on about stuff and relationships. And I'm glad it's only surface and they move past it.
I hate these scenes in movies where we have to let characters just espouse exposition about their backstory. Like, the movie literally stops for them to do this. And it's the most melodramatic nonsense I could think of. I mean, this is Phoebe Cates level from Gremlins, talking about the wife and the kid. You're asking a two-time Oscar winner to deliver this. And I'm both annoyed that this movie's taking itself too seriously, and further annoyed that nobody seems to be in on the fact that this movie is stupid.
So you don't want them to make any attempts to make us like the humans. Now, I'm kind of with you in that these movies have never been about the humans. It's always been about the dinosaurs and them attacking the humans. But you don't want any attempts made to have us actually like them.
I want it done through action. I don't want it done through exposition.
All right. So, going in, I had not read any of the plot synopsis or anything of that sort of this movie. I figured it was strictly going to be us following Scarlett Johansson and this band of mercenaries going after and running from dinosaurs. So, color me shocked when this boat appears and we're meeting Ruben, Isabella, Teresa, and Teresa's apparently always high and shirtless boyfriend, Xavier. This is why I have said since Fallen Kingdom, actually since The Lost World, that I want Spielberg to stop being the spearhead of this franchise. He's always going to be using the same trope of we need children and family to latch onto and laugh with them and hope that they survive. Now, all of these films since 2015 have crossed $1 billion mark, so I guess he isn't wrong, and no studio is going to listen to two dorks and another podcaster rant about wanting more from this franchise. But I want more from this franchise. Why, oh why, do we have to be so formulaic? You know exactly how this is going to end. There's this one bit of suspense about this family is lifted in a set of minutes, and I'll mention it when we get there, but Jesus Christ, guys, how sick are we of having a family unit be a part and sometimes center of Jurassic World?
We discussed on Superman some of the stuff that you were really unhappy with that filmmaker that you feel like you see. Yeah, you can fucking triple stamp that me when it comes to anything with Steven Spielberg's name on it. I'm tired of this, because you can spell it out. We've seen it. They get in the way of this film and of what this film could be. It's their distraction. They take away from the fun. They take away from the action. They take away from the pacing, the plotting. And I don't like any of them. None of these four do I give a shit about or like whatsoever.
That's the biggest problem. Not a single one of them is likable. The dad is a pushover in every degree. The oldest daughter is a bimbo who is only attracted to the boyfriend because he's got a big dick. The boyfriend is immensely unlikable and is only here for the second half of the movie to make cheap pot jokes. And the little girl is only here to sell a stuffed plushie that she'll be able to buy at Universal, I am sure, in the very near future. And more importantly, on the Spielberg thing, of course they're family of divorce. And that's why they're out of this boat. I'm like, of course, because Spielberg, even as a producer, cannot help himself. Or for a movie that's about rebirth, this is retread. And I am so sick of it.
See, I thought they were a product of the mother dying. And it took me a second viewing for me to realize, no. This is actually divorce. When he says, your mom's never going to let me take you guys out again, that's when it hits me. Oh, yeah. So you guys are the product of divorce. I don't have a big problem with that. I just have a problem with injecting these people, period. You know, and we're going to get to a series that Spielberg spearheaded that when he wasn't on was just god awful. But I just find his inclusion of this to be tiresome. But you know what? You guys are absolutely right, though. It's going to sell plushies and it's going to sell rides. So nobody besides us wants to see dinosaurs just killing people. They want us to actually care for people. And I guess I just have to roll with it.
I'm going to create my own headcanon where the mother was the female scientist at the beginning of this film, and she got off easy because she didn't have to deal with the rest of this family.
All right. So on the sailboat, we're seeing Ruben asking why Xavier had to come on this trip, and Xavier is too tired to take the wheel.
We are asking the same thing in the audience.
Xavier just wants to anchor. Ruben just says that he'll take the wheel again as Xavier just needs some red vines. Teresa says that she is going to NYU, so she knows what she's doing as Teresa sees something in the distance. They sail closer, and then something hits them. Bella asks if it's a you-know-what as the Mosasaurus just swims into them. Xavier is stuck in the hole, and I knew, boys, when he lived past this, he and this entire family were going to make it through the entire movie. I thought maybe they would kill him here, and I thought it would have been a good thing to kill him here, but no, they let him live.
I thought that would be a good way to play it. And as soon as they didn't do it, you might as well just put freaking Mithril on all of these characters because they weren't going to be injured in any way.
Yeah, they almost have a they almost have the Hogan clause in their contract of that doesn't work for me, brother, because they always get out of every situation unscathed.
I think this scene's okay. It just ends with no stakes being made. It's like, okay, it was kind of thrilling there for a bit, but what do we take from it? Nothing.
Okay, this is when I feel, and I think it's one of the reasons that this movie got done so quickly, I don't think they wrote a Jurassic World, Jurassic Park movie. I think they had some scripts floating around that were adventure movies with creatures. They Frankensteined it together, slapped a title on it, and this is what we got.
Interesting.
Because I don't feel like they wrote a Jurassic World movie anywhere in what I see.
So they make it onto their topple boat, and they're safe for now. Meanwhile, there's a party on the vessel as Loomis and Zora have a talk. By the way, guys, am I the only one who can't hear the name Loomis without thinking Halloween?
I think that was an intentional.
Do you really?
Well, to a certain degree, but every time I wanted there to be a scene where they fight the D-Rex at the end, and he goes, "I shot it 6 times."
We cut to the next morning as there's a toy dinosaur being used as an alarm. They're hearing a distress call from 29 miles in the opposite direction, and Zora pushes to go after them. Martin says that he agrees with Atwater that the Mosasaurus comes first, but Duncan makes the call to turn this into a search and rescue mission and to go after the family in need. We then cut back to the Delgados waking up and getting rescued. So this didn't take long, did it?
Oh my God. And also, it's bad enough he's stealing from Jurassic Park, but he's also trying desperately to make this aliens.
Oh, for sure. They tell the group about what it was that attacked them and that they shouldn't have been out this far to begin with.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, it's hard for me to elicit sympathy for you when you actively defy the law.
Exactly. But Zora is still, like, always vouching for this family, which bugs the shit out of me.
I thought they were going to do the Newt thing with the daughter when they revealed she had a family, a daughter that died, was stepped on by a dinosaur or something.
Who's patrolling these waters? If it is so forbidden that nobody can go, shouldn't we at least see somebody or hear somebody or have some type of threat that they got to escape from to go to this island?
That's a great question. I didn't even think about that. The family is told about their mission to pick up samples, and they track signals of the Mosasaurus finding them. They look out the window and find the Mosasaurus swimming in the water, and these are scenes I remember seeing in the ads of the Mosasaurus just right under Zora as she reaches down to get the sample, and of it jumping out of the water. Again, I'll say, I think this is a good scene, and it looked great on the big screen. I find this scene fun.
Once this stuff is, we're going to pick this movie apart. It's what we're doing. When this is going on, I'm having enough fun with it, but this happens here and I'm like, huh, Roy Schneider going to sue somebody.
I'm happy something is at least happening.
Yeah.
I'll give that as a positive. And I also like we're getting like proper what Spinosaurus is more likely than not actually look like.
Yes.
So a little celebration happens as they get the sample and they put it in the case. Loomis then tells Zora, what if they don't get the moment for science to take its course and save people? They look out the window and see the Spinosauruses, which you guys mentioned them, and Gareth Edwards agrees with you guys. He loved these from Jurassic Park 3 and made it a point to put them in here. Bobby tries shooting them before he gets taken off the boat right in front of Bella. Bella is about to fall into their jaws before Ruben saves her as Duncan tries outrunning them.
All right, this part... This whole boat crash broke my brain. What little breadcrumbs I have, because this is one of the worst examples of the family being bulletproof and stupid.
Yes.
They all jump off the side of the boat, two of them unprovoked, and, oh, we're in shallow water, so we'll be okay. You still have to swim a considerable amount. They might as well have had a protective shield around them for this entire movie, because I hate movies where characters are put in dangerous situations, but they never feel like they're actually endangered and possibly fear of being killed.
Not only that, but one, I feel like the child jumps off because, you know, my boyfriend, I'm jumping off the boat. Yeah, good timing. But okay, they're going to shallow because the dinosaurs can't get there. They get to the shallows. And then they keep getting chased for like 5 more minutes. This is the longest reef that has ever been seen for a boat hauling ass.
Ruben tells Bella that it's going to be okay as Martin just sits and lets Teresa fall in the water. The boat is surrounded and forced to crash. And we have the scene of them driving by and into rocks as Duncan tells them to jump as he crashes right onto the beach.
I thought he was dead right here.
I did too.
And we have a scene right before this where, of course, we got to show that our person who's going to
stand in.
Yes, thank you. That the person who set this all up is going to be evil and is willing to sacrifice a kid to get the mission done. And it's just really, Stevie Wonder saw that coming.
We see that Xavier and Teresa are okay as they find Teresa's dad. Meanwhile, Martin scrambles onto the beach and everyone proves to be okay. You know what? We meet this Nina character. She's here for like 5 minutes, but I did like the scene of her like crawling on this pile of rescue rafts and then being taken away. I think it's a nicely filmed death shot, even though, again, we hardly know this character.
Oh, you mean the stand-in for Vasquez?
Yeah, well, we didn't know her enough to think that her was Vasquez. If it was Vasquez, she would have lived till right towards the end. But no, she dies right here.
I did like that they at least kill, you know, as soon as you think they're rescued, that they kill off everybody who, unless you're making it to the end, you are killed off right here.
No, there's one guy who lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah.
The other black guy lasts longer.
Bella, Ruben, Xavier, and Teresa, they find a good view, as Martin says, exactly what this island is. It's a land of experimentation, and it's the home of malformed dinosaurs.
Okay.
It'd be great to see that movie.
How many fucking off-sites does this company have? we have already had Site B. Like, at this point, they're on Site J.
What I like about this is the idea of it being, all of these dinosaurs have been made. We've established that. They're not quote-unquote real dinosaurs. They've been taking DNA from frogs and everything for years, and mosquitoes. But now we're seeing the deformed dinosaurs and where they stay. I like that idea. I just wish they would have stuck with it. Later, we're going to see a combination of a raptor and a pterodon. I think that's a cool idea. They do nothing with it.
Look, one of my favorite parts of Rudolph is the Island of Misfit Toys. You know, great. I'm a Charlie in a box. It's a choice. But to me, what it really shows is, hey, we spent a lot of time just making deformed dinosaurs, and yet somehow they all live as well. To me, dinosaurs in the right way are exciting enough, exotic enough, and real enough, like they existed, that you don't have to go Godzilla. And instead, we're just going to get shit that was drawn on the back of a napkin.
Zora says that they are now desperate and that all of them want all the money so they have no choice but to continue their mission. They just need to get in and get out, as they say. They head into a restricted area, and the backup plan involves a flyby destruction tomorrow night. So we're getting a ticking clock at least a little bit here.
Itch. Then why would you wait this long to start your mission?
I know.
Oh, shit.
Especially, yeah, it's the dumb thing of you're on a clock, but they don't act like it.
We then cut to Ruben finding thermal power, and Teresa just wants the head of the guy who tried killing her, but Xavier has some damp weed to help get them through. We cut to the mercenaries moving through some water, and Zora says that something just moved past her leg. She also wants to know exactly what happened to the girl from earlier. Duncan says that he tries to avoid the jungle, as Loomis says his dream always involves him dying in a shallow sea, and we also learn that Loomis was a student of Alan Grant, which was the only reference to the previous series, by the way.
I like that, though. That one too. Actually popped me, because it says it, and it just keeps swimming by.
Yep, move along. Loomis says that they don't rule the Earth. We just think we do, and when the Earth gets tired of them, it'll just shake them off like a summer cold, and that survival is a long shot.
Yeah, like me surviving this movie. I'm squirming in my seat at this point.
Really?
In fact, I saw this twice, further highlighted that point.
We then see Bella take a liking to a small plant-eating dinosaur.
Holy shit.
So, the funniest thing about this is, yes, they do allow her to keep it, but once they leave this area, it's going to fucking die. So stupid.
Well, they don't know that.
So I will be heading to Universal here in about, what do I got, about 8 weeks, 7 weeks. We'll work on the schedule. I fully expect to see a backpack with this dinosaur available for purchase, and my kids to be looking at me going, "Dad, put that down. You can't have it."
So you're not going to be telling your kids to put it down. They're going to be telling you to put it down.
Oh, believe me, when we go into the Dinosaur Conservation Center, it's Dad time to go.
So Ruben just lets her keep this dinosaur as a pet. And here's something I didn't understand in watching this movie. And look, it's barely over 2 hours, so we've complained a lot this summer of these movies being so long, but this one wasn't that long. Lord knows we didn't want this to be longer, but why didn't this creature's mom come after it? That would have been a cool thing. Why are they allowing this baby dinosaur from Baby the Secret of the Lost Legend, which is a reference I think only Adam gets, to just kind of linger without any other dinosaurs coming after it? I thought that would have been okay.
Yeah, it seemed... It had to have been cut. It had to have been, because there's no way you have a baby dino without mom somewhere close by to threaten the group.
Ruben then expresses gratitude to Xavier for jumping in after Teresa. So we have character arcs hard at work, boys. Martin looks up and finds some tags, and then he finds somebody hanging from a tree. So, of course, this is when he gets a gun. We cut to Xavier coming back and saying it's his watch, so Ruben should get some sleep. Again, more character arcs here, boys. Because earlier, you know, Xavier couldn't be bothered to take the wheel, but now he'll take the post. And then Ruben and Xavier say, while Xavier may be lazy as hell, Teresa wouldn't be alive if it weren't for him.
That's debatable.
Xavier then says he doesn't know why she's with him, and then leaves to take a piss.
Oh God, this is such a long gag with this piss joke, with the dinosaur sneaking up behind him.
All right, let's get there. So while out, he doesn't spot the raptors behind him, and they're taken out by this winged dinosaur, which, again, as I mentioned, is a combination of a raptor and a pterodon. This, of course, causes him to piss more. So we're going to keep this gag going. But I don't know. In the theater, this was fun. I actually kind of jumped at this. But it's just like, you're not even going to put this guy in danger. You're just going to take it away right away.
Well, it's also the problem of, like, these dinosaurs have no primal instinct. They wait. They should have sprinted at this guy at the first chance of seeing fresh meat.
Not only that, the weed smell. Have the dinosaurs drawn to that, where they get attacked because this dumbass is freaking Jeff from American Dad and just smoking weed everywhere he goes.
It would have been funny if the dinosaurs got a contact high, though, and they played that as a joke. You could have actually done something with that.
Have them eat a stash and you just see them rolling around.
Boy, Adam with the references today. We cut to the next day as the other group are now moving through tall grass. Never a good idea.
Zora. Again, it's just, what have we seen in the previous movies that we can re... Like, this movie has more rehash than a freaking Denny's. Second Denny's reference in this movie, in this podcast.
Zora investigates a noise and once again runs into Loomis, who is once again chomping Altoid.
Oh my God, this was painful.
It was. We then get the obligatory ooh and ah moment that we basically need in all these Jurassic World movies, apparently.
It's the freaking mandate.
As they see these big brachiosauruses and Loomis goes after a sample and gets sucked into this moment. Again, like...
this, go ahead. You have this moment in the first Jurassic Park movie. It's freaking magical. It really is. You have a moment in Jurassic World that tries to ape it, doesn't really do it. But even in, was it Fallen Kingdom, you really pulled at your heartstrings. This feels so fake, so artificial. One, because it looks artificial, but it cannot sell what's done before. You got to find a different way to do this, because this is freaking, this is the Timu version of trying to recreate this scene.
Nonetheless, Zora fires the sample dart, and Loomis is celebrating as the original Jurassic Park theme just swells and the sample is gathered.
Oh my
best
God.
Character like best character in the movie this far is freaking that theme.
Yeah, because it's doing all the heavy lifting. But this is also my problem with Edward. It's like Rogue One. It's all stuff you're familiar with. And the stuff that is new is cringeworthy.
Speaking of which,
he took the wrong lessons from Rogue One being too dour and tried to like cram jokes into this movie where they're not needed.
Speaking of which, we cut back to the Delgados as Ruben, sometimes it's hurt, sometimes it's not leg, starts bothering him. This was a...
Okay. This fucking movie commits the writing sin of people are injured when the plot requires them to.
Yes.
Because they forget about this. It's like regarding Henry, where this guy has a brain injury and he keeps forgetting that this actor keeps forgetting he's supposed to be crippled. And nobody cared enough directing this movie to pay attention to that. Especially, that's the one way you could add tension. There's a ticking clock and he can't move. that fast to make it. So either one of them has to go further ahead to make up time, or you do the After Earth thing, which, I mean, look, this movie should have been called Afterbirth instead of Rebirth, where it's, you need to do this because I can't. But nope, just sometimes he can sprint, he runs like Forrest Gump, and other times he's hobbling around like Yoda.
Ruben says he's okay with Bella having Dolores the dinosaur tag along. Xavier stumbles down a hill, and the rest follow, including Dolores, who's none too happy and runs away scared. When they get back up, Teresa says that she'll go get the boat, and all Xavier wants is more licorice. So, of course...
And Twizzlers couldn't pay? You had to go with fucking Red Vines?
All right, we then get what I would call the best scene of the movie. It involves Teresa and this T-Rex waking up and getting a drink of water. One, it doesn't make a lick of sense that this thing can swim with the arms that it has, and this raft proves to be the toughest raft I've ever seen, as even a
this fucking raft is made of adamantium. It's indestructible.
Even a T-Rex's jaws can't penetrate it, but as a scene of popcorn-chomping suspense, I think this works rather well, actually. I had a lot of fun watching this, and again, really fun on the big screen.
I think this is why they actually decided to put Kep's name on this thing, because this harkens back to the original novel. I think it's cool. I think it's fun. I think it's paced really well. Seeing, you know, Rexy look like a freaking dog asleep, you know, it's fun. This actually is kind of the magic that you want out of a Jurassic movie. So I liked it. I'm glad that they focused on the, you know, zoomed in on the do not inflate until for people that were going to bitch and moan about why she was dragging it. So this is good stuff. But yes, I do laugh at the thought of trying to see T-Rex swim with his little baby arms.
Edward says good things here, where there's one scene of her kind of moving around and then he turns the camera around and the T-Rex isn't there anymore. Which, okay, you can laugh at the fact that it's there, it's not. Why would you not notice it? But I thought that was actually very well done.
I saw that in 2014 with a different giant monster. But yeah, I'll agree. It's fun stuff.
I liked it up until the raft blows up and the T-Rex disappears like it's performing a magic act. That broke me, because these T-Rexes in this franchise must be part Nightcrawler from the X-Men, because they could teleport and make no noise.
Bella is under the water, hiding in this raft, and they get out of reach as old Rexy just gets frustrated and storms off, leaving the still inflated raft behind. We cut back to the mercenaries as they're up on a cliff debating on whether to get this egg sample, and they lead themselves down the cliff. Love how Zora is fucking with Loomis, saying that he's only got about 40 feet to go. This is pretty fun. He lands as they make their way through a sort of temple to get some eggs. Kind of weird that he landed right where some water was, but okay.
Yeah, in this abandoned island, there's a temple that... Yes. That looks like the opening of Raiders.
Yes, very Raiders.
Yeah.
I thought like, that.
God damn, can you stop stealing from better movies?
Yeah, they were set there, either something got moved or something is set up for what they want to do later, because there's no reason to put this in here.
This was a Gareth Edwards idea. They originally were going to get these samples some other way. I can't remember exactly what, but Edwards was like, what about if we just go in this temple and grab these eggs? And Spielberg and Kep said, okay, go with it.
Oh, I have an issue with, I don't know, half these people run downstairs at the same time that dude falls several hundred feet to walk up like he's a freaking Cobra agent who's got plot armor on, and they all meet at the same time. Oh, jeez.
Loomis grabs an egg and suggests open sourcing their samples, making it universally acceptable. This, of course, would lead to them being broke as hell. So all of a sudden, he has a heart, right? He's just like, okay, let's just make it universally acceptable. We're seeing some hammering, which attracts the attention of the pterodons, and they attack. The sample is left, and there's a fight to retrieve it. Loomis lets it go and is hanging off a cliff with the sample within reach as one of them gets eaten. Henry reaches the sample, and it flies in the air as he falls in some conveniently placed water, and the sample falls right near him.
Yeah, and that water is too shallow for him to not be injured whatsoever.
Zora then closes it in the case and says it's time to go home. We cut back to the Delgados, moving through the calmness of the stream. They dock, as Ruben says, they're almost there. Meanwhile, Zora finds some footprints outside the research facility, and they're in search of the family from earlier. They find the group as Teresa asks where the son of a bitch from earlier is. They find Martin, who pleads his case, saying that she's lying about trying to let her die, but Zora doubts him due to Martin having a gun.
Okay. This island is so fucking big, and they still manage to coincidentally find each other at the exact same time.
Yes.
And the T-Rex, when the T-Rex attacks her in the raft, they do the shot of the T-Rex attacking the window of the car in the first one.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I'm starting to really hate Gareth Edwards. Because he's aping a lot of the problems I had with Rogue One.
Martin says they just need to relax until the helicopter arrives, but Bella says to stop talking as the generator sounds angry. And this is when the facility starts playing Stand By Me for some ungodly reason. They're attacked as they move inside the facility and find the lab where it all happened. We get the obligatory hiding under a car scene, and Edwards is taking some angles used previously. Bella is trapped as Reuben causes a distraction so she can escape, but a glass is toppled, and of course this is all taking place in a product-addled convenience store.
I do think if you are going to completely get your movie paid for by product placement, at least put it in a store.
There you go. Like
there's a reason that all these products get FaceTime. It makes sort of sense that you would have this. It's almost like a PX on a military base, so I kind of get it. What I can't get on board with, though, is the look of these creatures. Yeah. I can't. Like, dinosaurs are enough. These mutant things just feel like, I don't know, they feel unfinished.
Everything looks like it needs a second pass in the VFX department. Yeah. And I wonder if that's attributed to the fact that they really spearheaded this production really quick.
They go underground as they find the tunnel system that leads to the ocean. They hear a helicopter approach as Loomis is the first to spot the Xenorancor. Martin attacks a ton of attention by getting in a car and driving away as Zora hides from another dinosaur. She gets in a tunnel as the helicopter can't find anyone, so it starts heading home. Loomis fires a flare, but the helicopter isn't the only thing that spots it. We see the Xenorancor take the helicopter and chomp it to pieces. The group reunites and come up with a plan to get out via boat, and Duncan makes a promise to Isabella that he won't let her get hurt.
Of course, much like Jurassic World has those jeeps that haven't driven in 20 years but still work fine, this one has a boat that's been sitting there for God knows how long, 17 years, and it still runs perfectly fine.
And by the way, we get some jeeps here too, so more product placement.
Oh, that too, but these jeeps have operated by Siri, which 17 years ago, we did not have those. Yep. So this movie can't even get the fucking technology right.
Meanwhile, Martin is driving away in the stolen car. They run towards the boat as the Xenorancor approaches. Bella comes face to face with it, but the creature is distracted by the car alarm. It finally grabs Martin, and Edwards milks this moment of Martin being held before it chomps down on him. So, of course, this guy was going to get killed.
This was so telegraphed, it might as well be working for Vince McMahon.
Another wrestling reference. It then approaches them on the platform as they struggle to turn off the light. Duncan then does the Goldblum thing of grabbing a flare and yelling at Zora to save the kids.
God damn it.
Did you guys think Duncan was a goner? I kind of did.
Yeah, yes, because he's black.
Yes, and the reason is because I know they filmed this twice. They filmed him, and then the studio went, we don't have time for reshoots, so film him surviving, and we'll figure it out later.
Much like the last film of another franchise we're going to be talking about here pretty soon. They get to the boat as a Xenorancor approaches, and they just get away. Zora screams for Duncan, and just as we think there's no possibility he'd show up, we see a flare.
I'd like that he survived. Because it at least, you know, it flips that trope on its head.
We cut to Reuben driving the boat as Bella is holding Dolores and Xavier is holding Teresa, which Reuben now accepts. So everybody survives. Zora then decides to give their samples to everybody as they spot some dolphins jumping in the water. As Duncan smiles at Zora, the music swells and credits roll on Jurassic World Rebirth, boys. All right, anything to say about the final scene here, Adam?
Until you stayed around, right?
Is there another goddamn...
No, I'm kidding.
Fuck you. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Jurassic World Rebirth? Adam, go ahead, sir.
It's a movie I didn't need. It's a movie I could say I didn't want. I don't think they've put enough time between this movie and the one before it to completely try to reinvigorate, I guess will be the right word, the franchise. So if you're not going to bring back Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, then this is technically a rebootical. And this doesn't do the job of separating itself enough from what came before. This can be inserted almost anywhere in the Jurassic Park franchise, and it would kind of fit because it's just a mishmash of a dozen different types of movies put together. I mean, this is whatever you would see on sci-fi movies in the early 2000s, and it's kind of what it is. Luckily, this movie is at least partially carried by Scarlett Johansson and Mahershala Ali. I think they do a pretty damn good job. They're captivating on screen. ScarJo's having fun in this. I mean, her character, she doesn't exist. I mean, she's here to look good and carry a gun and repel and get things done. And that's all they really give her. And I think it's fine. This is weird, though, because it's got dinos, I'm going to go see it. But you don't get the dinosaurs that we're accustomed to other than one scene with the T-Rex. And you get the Spinosauruses, which are really cool. I mean, shit, I used to have some plastic toys of those as a kid. The Mosasaurus, you get a little bit. But everything else we get is, whether it's Universal or Gareth Edwards, wanting to play with some funky little monster movie and setting it on this island. It doesn't do a job of being a good Jurassic Park movie. It doesn't do a good job of being a good Jurassic World movie. It's a standard fare action monster movie that they put a title on. And that's kind of what the movie is. It's amazing how forgettable this film is, where in the rest of this franchise, even the movies I didn't like, they are not forgettable. Almost everything in this movie is forgettable. It doesn't stick around. And that's a shame. Look, the movie's a success. We're going to get another one. We'll see how long it takes before we get another one. But this was ho-hum for me. When I was in the theater, I didn't dislike it. It was fine. So I'm going to give it a score that reflects that. It's a 5. It's fine. Enjoy it in the theater. I don't think it's going to be enjoyable at home, though. And I think that's a problem, because I think without a big screen, this movie loses anything that makes it worth watching. So 5 on 10, give it a shot, but ho-hum.
5 on 10 from Mr. Bunch. Matt, you've been kind of licking your jaws this entire film review. Why don't you go ahead and finally chomp down on your main course, sir?
Well, I was drooling because this movie put me to sleep and I had to wipe the drool off my mouth, because holy crap, this, for a movie I saw twice, and I only did so because we waited a month and I had forgotten most of it, to Adam's point, this is far and away, I would call, the most disposable entry in the franchise. If it's the worst, we'll talk about that shortly. Remains to be seen. But there's not a lot in here in the way of memorability or even one like really cool action scene, which even the lesser films all have something like that, whether it's ironically good or just of proper quality. This is just everything I hate about modern franchise filmmaking. We made another one just because we want to make some money, and we got a director who agreed to say yes because he's obsessed with the past rather than taking the premise of this title, Rebirth, and doing something new. It's largely more retread than rebirth. And I find that to be annoying. Not that I had high expectations for this, but with a reboot, I kind of want you to go in a new direction. Or I just had my standards too high in this franchise. Look, its track record is what it is. But with my low expectations, it basically matched them. And God damn, did this feel like the 2 hours I sat there in the theater, because I was crossing my legs, I was shaking my leg, I was doing everything I could to stay invested, and even a game, Johansson and Mahershala Ali weren't enough to salvage this for me. So I'm going to give it a 4, and I'm going to stand by it. Like, if there was something that was like offensively bad, like I would put this on par with something like Transformers. But there's no, like, I don't see Devastator's balls or anything like that, or there's no mud flapping skids, but this is about as shameless with the product placement as those Transformers movies, so it's on par with that. But yeah, 4 on 10, and I think my 2 viewings, that'll be all I watch in my lifetime.
4 on 10 from Mr. Goudreau. I'm going to say something that I didn't think I would ever say. I want Steven Spielberg off this property. I think his tendency to go with the tropes he's gone to since the 80s has really hampered this franchise, especially the last couple. I think there's some good here, though. I think I like it a little more than my two colleagues. In fact, I know I do, because my score reflects it. I really do enjoy the T-Rex scene involving Teresa, which they plucked out of that first book, as Adam mentioned. And I enjoy the stuff on the water. But everything involving these characters, as much as they try to make us like them, I just don't give a shit. I think, as Matt said, I think Scarlett Johansson and Ali are very game for what they're brought into, and I think they're having fun doing what they're doing. But Gareth Edwards has proven it with Rogue One, which we reviewed a couple years ago, and this, that he cannot take a property and modernize it. He has to go to tropes that just don't work anymore. And this movie just doesn't work as a whole. I think the D-Rex is utterly ridiculous, design notwithstanding. It made sense in the first Jurassic World movie, where everybody says dinosaurs are boring, so we have Bryce Dallas Howard and the people in that lab come up with something that will make it exciting. That makes sense. This does not make sense. And everything from that first scene of a rapper, of a candy wrapper being the reason it gets out is just utterly ridiculous. The movie is ridiculous. Yet, when it's going on, and me and my friend are just kind of sitting there watching, and the drive home, I'm looking at her and I'm like, you know what? I think that was fun, but I don't know if I'm going to remember it. Which, like Matt, I had to watch this a second time just so that I can get the story beats down, because I did kind of forget it, which is a big problem with these huge franchise movies. If I forget it before I'm home, there's a problem with that. Yet the T-Rex scene and everything on the water makes this a low six for me, but it's not going to be something I rewatch in the years to come. Much like Dominion last week, I'm probably not going to watch this for quite a while, if ever. So 6 out of 10 for me on Jurassic World Rebirth. And with that, boys, we have concluded our full reviews of the whole Jurassic Park, Jurassic World franchise. We're going to do what we always do at the end of these franchises. Let's give our ranking of how we feel about these movies. Adam, why don't you go first, sir?
All right. I'm gonna go top down. So yeah. Number one, Jurassic Park 3. No, number one, Jurassic Park. You could never do another movie, and this would still be one of the best franchises that exists. Jurassic Park is an astounding piece of cinema, period. Number two, Jurassic World. I think that movie takes that original concept, plays it in the same way that that original source was meant to be. So Jurassic Park, then Jurassic World. Then there's a chasm before you get to the movies below that. But after that, I'm going to put Jurassic Park 3. I think that movie knows what it is, and it sticks to it and has fun with it. Then, this is when I got difficult. Okay, I crapped on the movie, but I'm going to acknowledge what it does, even though to me it's two completely different films. Then I'm going to do Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I got a hard time with it, but I can appreciate what that movie does. Then, because of the return, I got to do Jurassic World Dominion. The movie's, again, way too fucking long. Having that OG cast is always going to warm the cockles of my heart. But I do think that kind of ties, and it's right there with this one, Jurassic World Rebirth for me, and then Jurassic Park 2, Lost World. So yes, Spielberg has the top and bottom of this list.
All right, Matt.
Oh, God. Break out the boxing gloves. My number one's Jurassic Park 3.
Not surprising, given that review.
Because that movie is, it knows it's dumb. I wanted 90 minutes of people running from dinosaurs, and that's what I got. So I can't say it was false advertising. My second one is Jurassic Park OG. I have immense problems with it, but for what it is an achievement. You cannot dispute that. I just wish it was a little bit more up my alley, and it was a little bit more fully in tune with what it wanted to be instead of Spielberg trying to play both sides, which we talked about in that first show. Then it's all movies I don't like. So from there, I'm like, I got to pick the piece of shit that smells the least. And I struggled with this. I honestly did. I'd go Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom number 3. That movie is stupid, and I, as much as I hate the first half, the second half is one of the most fun experiences I've had watching a movie in a long time. So it kind of makes up for it in a lot of ways, and I appreciate the audacity of it. Then I go Jurassic World. It's disposable, but I don't think it's offensive. I just think it was kind of a missed opportunity in a lot of ways. Then, to Adam's point, this thing drives off the cliff like the trailer in The Lost World, which is what I have at number 5. The only reason it's not at the bottom is because I still think that that scene with the trailers and the T-Rexes is one of the best set pieces in this entire series. And I do like the raptors and the tall grass before they get emasculated by gymnastics. And I'm like, all right, where do I go from here? I'll go Rebirth. And then I think Dominion is my bottom just because it was 2.5 hours of nothing. And for a movie called Jurassic World, it's the biggest example of false advertising because the A storyline was about locusts. And I just felt like it was a huge waste of time and probably the biggest missed opportunity considering you brought everyone back for that. So Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic Park, step down, Fallen Kingdom, Jurassic World, larger step down, Lost World, cataclysmic drop off after that, Rebirth, and Dominion.
I like the fact that we have some dissension here because my list is different, kind of similar to Adam's, but let me go to my first two. I struggle with my number one. What I came up with for my number one, and this might be controversial, is Jurassic World. The reason why is because when I think of what Jurassic Park could be, And when I think about the fact that when I was a kid, to go to a place and be surrounded by dinosaurs and be able to pet them and ride a triceratops and everything that movie does was kind of a fantasy come true for me. And I love the fact that Trevorrow, whether he's a hack or not, was able to make that movie into a fun piece of expensive B-movie fare with the dinosaurs attacking. Yeah, Chris Pratt riding along the dinosaurs, all of that, stupid as hell. But I had a lot of fun in watching that. My number two is the OG, Jurassic Park. The reason why is I think it was a last-ditch effort for Spielberg to bring back the Jaws Spielberg that I love so much. We might talk about here pretty soon. I liked that it played both sides, in that you had the ooh and ah and the cuteness of the dinosaurs, and you had the danger of the T-Rex roaming around. And I think the way both sides are played in that movie is pretty remarkable. The directing in that movie is superb. Then, oh boy, we get to some shit. I have Jurassic Park 3 as my number 3. I think that movie embraces the B-movie part of what Dinosaurs on the Loose is and puts an original member of that cast in the middle of it, and I had a lot of fun in revisiting that. I even revisited it before we went to these Jurassic World movies. I revisited the first three, and that one still holds up pretty high. My number 4 is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, because as bad as that movie is, and go back to that review, we tore it to shreds. I admire the balls of it because it does what The Lost World tried to do, which is bring dinosaurs into our world, and does it in an original and fun way. I had a lot of fun with a few parts of that movie, even though it's surrounded by a whole bunch of bullshit. But the balls of it is what I admire about it. My number 5, I went with Rebirth, what we just reviewed, just for the simple fact that it has two scenes I hold as very high marks of the series, the T-Rex scene and the scenes on the water. Those aren't enough to bring it high above my number 6, which is The Lost World Jurassic Park. Spielberg comes back to do a movie that funds DreamWorks, and it has all the looks and feel of a movie made to fund another fucking studio, because there's no heart at all in that. But yet, as Matt said, the set piece of them hanging off that ledge in those trailers is pretty remarkable enough to hold it above Jurassic World Dominion, which you bring the cast back and you make the centerpiece about fucking locusts. Kukumo to you. Fuck you. That movie was just abominable. I really hated that movie. So there's my list. Matt, do you want to reveal what's next, or do you want me to?
I think you should, because I totally forgot what's next. So by default, I will defer.
All right. Well, Matt thought that we didn't have enough of the beard the last couple years, and apparently we're going to be doing every single one of his movies that were made into sequels, because as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, we cannot get away from the fact that Jaws is celebrating its 50th anniversary. You watch any sports event, you go to any streaming service, you will see, hell, I went to the theater to see this movie, and there was a trailer for the upcoming release of Jaws on August 29th for its 50th anniversary. So guess what? We're going to be covering that series. We're going to be covering Jaws. We're going to be covering Jaws 2. We're going to be covering Jaws 3D and Jaws the Revenge. Oh boy, what a set of films.
There's four?
There's four. Oh yeah. You didn't know that?
No.
Yes. Adam, what do you expect?
Wait, so which one did you not? You don't know Jaws the Revenge?
Yeah, you don't know Jaws
the Revenge. I did not know Jaws 4.
Oh my
God.
Oh,
fuck.
Oh.
The best we've ever done.
Oh, God. I cannot wait. Oh my God. All right, I was going to go to Adam, but Matt, why don't you take this, sir? What are you expecting when we get to the Jaws series?
Oh boy. Well, I'm excited to go see this. It comes out on my birthday, so I will be going to the 50th anniversary, probably in IMAX. I'll go all out. Certainly an important movie, and in a lot of ways, it's the blockbuster that started the movement, and also started sort of like James Bond, where it went from being the trendsetter to following trends. And I'm excited to talk about that trajectory. And my God, I can't wait to talk about Jaws 4, especially since someone in this podcast has no idea of its existence until 30 seconds ago.
Unbelievable. Oh, I can't wait. Adam, you know about the original. Which one did you forget about? Did you forget just number 4? Did you know about the third one too?
No, I knew about the third one just because I remember the commercial for 3D. And I remember going, hey, that looks like the theme park attraction I see. So, wow. I'm looking forward to this. Every now and then, I pop in Jaws to see it. And because we go to Universal quite a bit, God knows I've had a shark pop up next to me on a tram ride more times than I could count. Recently, there was the 50th anniversary documentary, which I have seen every clip in that documentary, I think a dozen times, don't care. I was going to watch the new documentary that's out on Disney Plus, Hulu, whatever streaming service has got it. I can't wait. I know Jaws very well. I can't say I remember anything about any sequel one of them that I just found out about. So it's going to be a hell of an experience. I can't wait to talk about it.
Matt, can we do Jaws of Revenge next week?
Yeah, I kind of want to go in reverse.
I know, right?
Everyone knows what we're going to say about the first one. It's like reviewing The Exorcist.
Yeah, I thought of that too, where you say it on all those podcasts when we do those classic films, that what else can be said that hasn't already been said?
Yeah, we should have just called this Jaws Sequels Retrospective. And then, because if we needed a fourth movie, we could have done Deep Blue Sea. Or we should have done Orca, because that's the Jaws ripoff.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, that'll be the next month. Oh, is that going to be fun? It just went from a fun series of podcasts to a really fun series of podcasts. So join us for those. Boys, I had fun going through dinosaurs with you. God knows. We suffered a lot through the last few weeks, but who knows? Maybe the next few weeks we'll suffer even more. But until next week, when we get to Jaws. You hear that? Every podcast could be our last. Thank you, boys.
It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. Claire, it's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex.
Stop! It's not the T-Rex. Probably.
Probably?
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
The Titanosaur herd should be right across this valley.
Well, they're herbivores, right?
Yeah.
That's good.
But the things that hunt them aren't.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Something's wrong. You're communicating.
Please visit and check out our Percolated Media Facebook page to get an advance look at what the boys will be reviewing that week, as well as other things such as Matt and Garrett's wrestling podcast, what the site has in store for the future, some periodically done written reviews, and so much more.
That is one big pile of shit.
Check out the Percolated Media archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the films of the DC Universe featuring Batman and Superman, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series, the Alien franchise,
the Mad Max movies, Avatar,
the Mission Impossible film series,
and so many more.
At no expense.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
You recording this thing?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Mr. Work here didn't tell us everything that we need to know.
Scheduling done by Matt.
Let's face it, in your particular field, you're the top minds.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Good job. You're making this look totally normal.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Kids okay?
I didn't ask. Why wouldn't they be?
Kids get scared.
What's to be scared about? Just a little hiccup in the power.
Sorry, I didn't say I was scared.
I didn't say you were scared.
I know.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Nice rocket.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
What if we get the samples and we don't give them over to a company that makes a life-saving drug and then prices it so 99% of the planet can't afford it? Science is for all of us, not some of us. Have you thought about that?
I guess I haven't.
Well, then maybe you should start.
Maybe you should stop.
I also did like that this is the opening of Godzilla with Bryan Cranston and Sally Hawkins, who played his wife. Or was she was a scientist.
I haven't seen it since it was
out. It's that scene where they're like, they shut down the, because the nuclear fallout was happening and there was the separator and you had to watch her die. So he's even aping himself.
We then go to a bar, and this is where we meet Marsha Shala Ali's character of Duncan Kincaid.
You cannot say his name.
Marsha Shala, right?
No, it's Mahershala.
Mahershala Ali.
All right, I'll go with that.
You just call him M. Ali.
Mr. Ali. So Mahershala?
Mahershala.
Mahershala, okay. Let me put that in my notes.
Oh, God dang. You know what, Matt? We got to make him do Luke Cage season.
No, oh, God. Some of the names on that show.
I'm good. Okay. So Kincaid says that. Adam, you said you were enjoying the chemistry. Come on. This made me feel like these two were going to get together.
Yeah, I had no doubt they were going to hook up, so I'm glad they don't play that route. And there's little drops that they do later on about stuff and relationships, and I'm glad it's only surface and they move past it.
All right, so you guys are...
Oh, you're not going to give me my floor to complain about this?
Go ahead.
All right, I hate...
We then cut to the other group setting up camp as Martin finds some tags. He looks up and sees something hanging from the tree above. Actually, this is Bailey, isn't it? Who is it? Who is it that finds the gun? It's Martin or Bailey?
I don't even know these characters' names.
Is that you're confusing mine with the name? The bad guy.
Okay, the bad guy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Burke. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Martin looks up and... When they get back up, Teresa says that she'll go get the boat, and all Xavier wants is more licorice. So, of course...
And Twizzlers couldn't pay? You had to go with fucking Red Vines?
I mean, this movie is the Twizzler of the franchise. It needed some Red Vines, the good ones.
Hey, Twizzlers are good when you get the non-strawberry ones.
All right, we then get what... They dock, as Ruben says, they're almost there. Meanwhile,
we also skip over the part where they, or is it coming up here? Are you going to talk about the T-Rex attacking again?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk about that here in a bit.
Okay, go ahead, because I got to bitch about something here.
Okay.